Hi, I'm Carlos from FNR. Just want to take a minute of your time before you listen to your favourite podcast. Did you know without Windsor Management Insurance Brokers, FNR would not be streaming football 24/7? Imagine that. We wouldn't even be on air. So if you're a business or a club and you need an insurance solution, contact John Mangos and his team at Windsor Management Insurance Brokers. They love football and they support FNR. So make sure you back them. Here's their number, 03-9663-2411. That's 03-9663-2411. Give them a call today. Cheers, amigo. Hope you enjoy this podcast. Welcome, everyone, to a wonderful Wednesday. You're on FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego, and this is Football Extra, our daily football show with news and more. Today on Football Extra, it is NPL Wednesday. But to kick us off on NPL Wednesday, we've got a special guest in the studio. It's Tom Callis. Tom was interim chairman of the AAFC until July 2017, but is a corporate global strategy and services professional. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning, Carlos. Good morning.
I mean, you're so well dressed too. I mean, you've really embarrassed and shamed us all here at FNR.
I've got to go to the office after this.
You've got a real job.
The road. Yes,
you,
indeed.
You've got a real job. But, look, I've seen your name around a lot since the establishment of the AAFC. Congratulations on the wonderful work that Robbie Cram and your team have done with this organisation. You've come such a long way in a short period of time. Can you tell us about the journey? Before we get into the article you wrote yesterday, the insightful article that everyone's talking about in football today on the website there, I want to know the background of the AAFC and how that's evolved in a very, very short period of time to be quite a powerful little
stakeholder group.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yes, indeed. Look, fundamentally, it really kicked off on the 28th of February last year, when the FFA announced that they've just suddenly realised that the financial model for the W League and the A League was unviable. A, they couldn't expand. B, they couldn't implement what they wanted to implement. They were cutting funding for organisations like futsal, for instance, and other add-ons and so forth. And we knew from many, many years ago that the model was flawed. And we knew the impact that it had, not only at the grassroots level, but across a lot of tiers of the game. We'll go into that a little bit about that later, of course. And so that impetus was really, it brought out in the open what we all knew. And we felt that this was a great opportunity to get organised, mobilised, I should say, and stake the case. Because if we didn't get involved at that particular juncture, we would have missed, I think, the boat in many, many ways. So that was the formative reasons why we all got together. And, of course, we contacted all the clubs internationally. I had grown men crying, presidents of clubs crying, too, in particular, interstate, because they felt that suddenly there's going to be something that might change the way things are heading. There's an atrophy in infrastructure across Australia, which people haven't realised yet. And so this talk about coming together, creating a second division and getting the focus away from just a flawed model at the top tier, we had to try and educate people that there's repercussions in that flawed model across the whole ecosystem of football. And if we don't change it, it's going to keep on impacting us. And the biggest gorilla in the room, and particularly for me, it's always been the question of infrastructure. So that was the real impetus. And if I can digress, I was pleased last week when John DeLuca from the PFA came out and explained that what he termed the infrastructure deficit, which is what basically the same thing we've been saying, is a big concern for all tiers of the game, particularly the top tier as well. And so what we've been trying to drive in the last year is an education process, but getting organised, getting subcommittees, getting consulting groups within our group. They're all volunteers, of course. Even the current board, they're all volunteers. And it's come together quickly because we've implemented it exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. Like most things in life, talk, opinions, everyone's got one. But it's the implementation process. You guys have done a stellar job in setting up a 24-hour, fully football radio service in many ways. You've implemented it very, very well. So it's not just an idea anymore. Mm. That's the same thing we did as well. So we had to have good implementation processes and skills, and we've done that. We are where we are in football in Australia is because we haven't implemented well. And although the modelling is flawed, we're still doing a good job in implementing that particular model in its own right. So we came together last year and we established an interim committee. And we wanted a national organisation, of course, represented equally on democratic principles across Australia. We didn't really want just Victoria and South Wales dominating an organisation like they've always had in football historically. So we were at pains to stress that it had to be one vote, one club, one seat from each state being represented as the director in our new AAFC board. And the most refreshing part about it was we had a great ally in FIFA and the AFC in many ways, because there's been a massive change, as you're aware. The Blatter years have gone. The Infantino era in openly, I think, is a more of a cleaner, more governance-centric organisation. It is what it is. I mean, they're trying to do a lot more, of course. It does take time. The Swiss government is actively involved in a lot of the reforms that are happening in FIFA. So a lot of the key personnel in FIFA in Zurich now are actually ex-government employees or appointees. So we tapped to that vein, and we got a great hearing, of course, great support from day one, and we are here where we are today.
When you first started, was your intention to just be an advocate for that your level of football, was second division in mind, what was your driver?
The main driver was the actual reform process itself. For us, this was a vehicle to get the reform process tabled publicly in many ways as well, and to start the education process, because if people didn't understand that the system was inherently flawed, no matter what we would do, we'd just kick the can down the road, as I've said before, and because we've got this penchant in Australia to try to design unique systems, particularly in the football sphere, which just amazes me. 4 years ago in Victoria, they wanted to implement this aberrant MPL model, I don't know if you recall, which was not any different to anything else in Australia, but it was unique amongst, look, it was touching upon these just incredible, unique, flabbergasted. It would have meant the catastrophic end to club football in Victoria. We would have become all youth clubs developing, designing players or whatever for the top tier. And they'd lost the plot. Clubs and football across the planet has become what it is because of club culture and developing strong clubs. Now, that's across the entire footprint of football, not just the top tier. The elements of promotion relegation, the elements of transfer fees, they're intricately woven into the success of football. So when you've abrogated those out of the game and you've created this unique model, it has flow-on repercussions. So in Victoria 4 years ago, they were trying to design a new MPL system because it had to tie into what they were trying to design up the top. We had to take the Federation to court, slap them with an injunction, push them to insolvency by withholding our funding for the Federation. And it cost us, all our clubs, all the top-tier clubs in Victoria, then 65, $220,000 to do that. We compromised. We formed the system of the MPL we have today with the key tenet of promotion relegation in it. So this year, clubs got promoted from community clubs into the MPL. MPL clubs got relegated into the community clubs, which is part and parcel of key tenets of football. Queensland's doing the same thing as well this year, if you notice, in their MPL system as well. So the AAFC was, yes, formed to lobby and to try and educate on the effects this model has on football overall, not just MPL but community clubs as well, obviously. And in so doing, we want to try and educate people as well. But for me, the fundamental gorilla in the room is the question of infrastructure. What people haven't realised is the A-League model actually encourages the atrophy of facilities across Australia. Because if you haven't got ambition, if you haven't got the mechanism to promote clubs that want to get promoted, to invest, to lobby councils or governments and so forth, to build the facilities from 500 to 3,000, from 3,000 to 7,000, which is part of the normal football culture around the planet, What happens is if there is no mechanism for that promotion, for instance, for ambitious clubs, facilities will start atrophying because people will leave the game. They won't build artificial grounds or pavilions or whatever. And then gradually, the next generation will find less than what we have. And so it's imperative that our generation doesn't receive what we've received from our previous generations. We've got to build hard assets, boutique stadiums, facilities. So this is, for me, the second division, the linking of the tiers, moving to the global standard. It's about protecting what's in jeopardy, because people think because we've got huge participation metrics today, they're going to remain so in 25, 30, 40, 50 years from now. No, it's not, because the other codes are far better organized than we are. There's a land war out there. People can see it, sense it. AFLX, rugby's getting it, obviously, in New South Wales and Queensland. If we don't get organised and protect what we have in our facilities footprint, it's not going to be around forever. The next generation of kids must receive hard assets from us. Mm. And it's imperative that we start working at that nationally, mobilisation plans. It's not just the imprimatur for this federation to do that. It's everyone's job to work to a coordinated plan. And so that, to me, is the fundamental concern that I have about the game. So unless we change and move to the global standard, that key plank, the gorilla in the room that I call it, is going to get atrophied. Our participation metrics will not remain where they are, because new generations will get exposed to, you know, AFL women's, AFL boys, wait for age in the rugby, which makes them more safer, so it will attract more kids. They'll get better organised and lobby their councils and the governments better than we certainly have in our game. So gradually, we will not keep this dominance we have in participation metrics. We've got to use it now to lobby, to raise the capital, to imbue ambition for the clubs that want to get promoted. And this is why in our championship modelling, we've got facilities as a key plank. You must have a 3,000-seat stadia to apply for a second division license. Mm. Okay. That is to drive that key metric to clubs to grow their facilities, expand their footprints across Australia. There's 700 clubs in Australia, 700. I want and I desperately love to see every single club have its artificial ground, have a small boutique stadium of 400, 500 people. And as the population grows in Australia, we're not going to be 24 million people forever. In Melbourne, we're 4 million today. We'll be 8 million probably 15, 20 years from now. Where are these kids going to play? Hmm. If we don't build these assets now, where are they going to play? It's very hard to do it later. It's very expensive to do it later. And that's what we're trying to do with AFC. Hmm. It's, yes, linking the tiers. But for me, the key plank is the infrastructure piece below that.
It's a fantastic motivation to get this right, Tom. Yeah. I think you've articulated it beautifully. I think that's part of the education process too. Of course, people look at the problems in the game, but they don't understand the underlying problems, not only for now, but for down the track. And as you said, there's no guarantee that the numbers will be there down the track to make the case that we can make now.
Correct.
We've never had more kids playing the game ever. We've always had a bigger number of kids playing the game. But right now, we can arm ourselves with this data.
Yes.
When we go to local council, when we go to state government, when we go to federal government, we have the data, we have the power, but we've got to mobilise it, like you said. Or we've got to realise it first. And that's what you're doing right now. You're making people understand that that's where we are right. Because subconsciously, no one's really picked this up.
Yeah.
But certainly a really, really important part. I'm really glad that that's the thrust behind the AFC too. Your article that was published yesterday on Football Today, terrific website with news and opinion about football. Time to think global when it comes to football model for Australia. The Australian football model, unique though it may be, is fundamentally flawed and needs to be overhauled to be consistent with with global football. There's a lot in it, right?
Course,
but what
yes.
I really, really paid a lot of attention to was this idea that an independent A-League in itself is not going to solve problems.
No, it won't.
Can you just explain your point there around that?
Okay. Fundamentally, you've got a closed league system, and that has repercussions all across the line. The A-League was designed and built to attract the mainstream public, in effect. Think of it as Big Bash, but with a longer season, for instance. And it hasn't worked. And it hasn't worked because what they haven't understood is that the reasons why we have millions of kids playing football in Australia is because it's a kids' participation sport fundamentally. Okay. Always has been.
Mm.
Okay. Now, the problem is it hasn't replicated to top-tier football because there is no connection. And there's no connection because parents and people do not see it as an entertainment-grade product. For example, you had Townsend, the CEO of Sydney, in your studio a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, Danny, that's the first name, sorry. And he mentioned how growing up he played soccer, but his family would only ever go and see the rugby league as entertainment on the weekends. And the first time he ever went and played when he saw an NSL game was when he actually played in it. Well, that's fundamentally what's happening at the moment. Mm. People will spend their money on what they value or class entertainment product, which is your Big Bash cricket. They've got swimming pools there now for kids to swim while they're watching the cricket. Sorry, but you know what I'm trying. You see what I'm trying to get at? So it's entertainment grade, and so they built the A-League on that premise. They think, oh, okay, let's make it snazzy it up, and we'll get the sports fans, not the football fans, which obviously they initially received, but the sports fan. When they had the clean air, obviously during those summer periods, we've talked about that before. Well, you did before with Mr. Howcroft as well. Mm. Now, fundamentally, unless you build football culture, Carlos, you're not going to fill stadiums. And unfortunately, it's a 2 to 3 generation exercise. The Japanese have understood that with their 100-year plan, but we haven't. We've taken a massive, massive shortcut. So we've built this A-League product, an expensive product, in colosseums for stadiums in the first place. We've built this administrative layer on top of that with exorbitant salaries which the game cannot afford. Our players at the top tier, we're paying them, in my opinion, more than the code can actually afford at this current stage in our cultural evolution of football. With me?
Mm.
So in other words, we've taken this massive shortcut thinking we'll attract the mainstream. So let's create an AFL-type-esque administration structure because it's going to explode. We've woken the giant. No, you've got to build culture. It takes generations. And it happens from club football. And you said that before with Jonathan. Clubs, getting people in family-centric football clubs. You've got to build a culture from ground up. You can't cheat. You can't shortcut it. And that's a fundamental flaw we've done. So by giving the A-League to the A-League owners, for instance, and then recapitalizing, we're just kicking the can down the road because we've missed it. You need to open up the entire football edifice. You've got to have promotional legation. You've got to have a second division. It's got to be linked to stadium facilities. We've got to scale back the A-League to play in affordable boutique stadiums. But guess what? We've never built them. What do we got? We spent 4 years at South Melbourne fighting the government and fighting other codes to protect a football asset in which we locked away now for 40 years on 40-year lease. That's a soccer football asset for the next 40 years. Unless we do more of these boutique stadiums across Victoria and Australia for the next generation, 3,000, 5,000. And as we grow in population and popularity, we upgrade. The footprint is there, then we just upgrade and upgrade. That's what's happened across the planet.
You talk about migrating the code to a global standard. Can you talk about talk about what that means?
Yeah. The key tenets of the FIFA statute are promotion by merit. There's a transfer fee system. I don't know what we were thinking in designing this unique model in Australia that obviously I think after 40 years people can see now it just doesn't work. You need to have transfer fees. You need to help fund football down the line. What we've done now is the high junior fee structure that we have in Australia is because of the unique modelling that we've created. It has repercussions, unforeseen repercussions, unfortunately. They had good intentions, no doubt, but it's had unforeseen detrimental repercussions across the whole game. Junior fees, youth development. The A-League youth system, which was designed and rolled out in 2008, has had repercussions on our international competitiveness across our youth teams, no doubt. And so unless we have kids playing senior football at 16, 17, 18 and training with senior men, we're not going to create the standard players that we want. Corralling them in youth systems until they're 19, 20, 21, then spitting them out, it's a flawed model.
Mm.
They need to be loaned out to second division teams or third division teams like they do around the planet, playing and training with senior men, playing for points, playing for promotion, playing for relegation, because we haven't built the culture to teach these children what it's really all about. They're all just developing.
Mm.
Developing for what? For the World Cup. And then again, they're just developing for the next World Cup. Seriously, we've got to get back to the core tenets of football, and that's what I mean by global standard. Promotion, relegation, linked tiers, club culture from the entire 700 clubs that we have across Australia.
Mm. The transfer system is an interesting one. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk by FIFPro to completely dismantle the transfer system around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how far down the track they are with that. Obviously, the PFA played a big part in dismantling the transfer system in Australia.
Yes.
You're now an authentic body that's talking to the FFA, of course, talking to other stakeholders with this next stage of Congress. What's the appetite been like across the board when you discuss the thing about the point of reintroducing transfer fees in Australia?
First thing is, with change, people need to understand that there's an acclimatisation process, firstly. I mean, Jonathan mentioned before about evolution, revolution. So it's an evolution process. But more importantly, I call it a acclimatization process. It takes time, and you've got to start talking to people and explain to people. And in time, people understand that. If you had said to people 12 months ago, Carlos, that we'll be here designing and talking about a second division with promotional relegation and linkages and having people on Fox and people like all the mainstream journos in our game, in code, agreeing, understanding the need for that change, you wouldn't believe me.
Mm.
But it's an acclimatization process, and that's what we're doing as well. So the transfer system, this linked tiers, the promotional negation, it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen because there is no other option for us as a game. So the stakeholders, I think, are finally understanding that we need to actually reform the game. And it starts with the federations as well. So bit by bit by bit, they'll understand what's required to be done. And so we need to get away from this unique model concept. It has unforeseen repercussions, in many ways detrimental. One bugbear that I have, for example, is the visa system. Every state, every federation in Australia has got a different visa, different point system. Our A-League has, you know, 5 visa players. We've got 2 in the NPL. Asian Federation has 3+1. Oh, please.
Mm.
It's not rocket science. We need a uniform process around visa players to encourage the development of players, for instance, Australian players. So it's a lot of things we need to kind of cover. But first thing is first, Carlos. We need to accept that we've made a mistake, firstly. Secondly, the solution is actually really, really easy. It's the migration process from the realization to the solution. That's the complex part, the migration process. Because it's what stream do you do first? When you design your radio station, you get to determine what do you do first? Okay, we've got to rent the premises first, we've got to find the personnel, buy the equipment, software. What goes first? What goes second? So that linear project plan is the complicated part, for instance. And we need people that are experienced in transformational work doing that piece, for instance.
Mm. And one more thing, I think we've got to redefine what mainstream Australia really is. The fact that people are suggesting that the football people aren't part of mainstream Australia, well, go to the Gap Football Club in Queensland. Go to Ashburton Football Club in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Go to the big football clubs all around Australia and then talk to me about what you see.
Yeah.
That is mainstream Australia. And the idea that football is not part of mainstream Australia is ignorant.
Yeah.
And it shows a lack of understanding of where we are as a sport and also in the demographics of Australia.
You nailed it. Mm. This is a key plank. We've built a unique system, not for football people, but for the so-called mainstream. Now, you touched the point before also about the ethnicity angle with clubs. This is with Jonathan. I want to answer something there clearly. people might not be aware that the Collingwood Football Club, in its inception, was a Catholic Irish enclave club. And if you were not Catholic or Irish, you couldn't play for them. Boston Celtic, basketball team in the US. Unless you had freckles, you were Irish and Catholic, you couldn't play basketball for that particular team. Now, clubs are formed across the planet by particular groups or migrant groups or whatever. Brisbane Roar was celebrating its Dutch heritage last year. Melbourne Victory had Get Bagpipes. When they formed the Melbourne Hearts, what other club in the planet is called Hearts? I was in Glasgow 2 years ago with George Campbell, and we went and saw Hearts play Motherwell. Now, the demographic they were trying to track there was obviously the Anglo-Celtic Scottish heritage group. Well, every club has that. Eventually, they morph into the culture of the country that they're at. So people got to get over that. So the clubs that were in the NSL, the clubs that were designed in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, they've morphed now into clubs. And so it just staggers me. But they're football people, and we need to build the football model for football people. Now, if an AFL family wants to come and watch a game, great. But this is why we need to build a culture of football, which is promotion relegation, which is linked tiers. I mean, I'm so pleased to see Queensland move to a promotion relegation system this year, obviously. And so that's part of building the culture for it.
Absolutely, Tom. Mate, it's been enthralling talking to you. I loved your article yesterday on Football Today. If anyone out there has not read Tom's article on Football Today, get on to footballtoday.com.au and you'll be able to have a read of that. Very insightful. And by the way, on behalf of FNR, I want to thank you for becoming a member of FNR last week.
Yes, yes. Look, this is something that talk, as like most things, is very, very cheap. We need to put our money where our mouth is as well. And I'd like to implore your listeners that to have a fully dedicated football radio show at our fingertips is critical for the game. We need to also be part of and help and promote and push that. So good luck, guys, and great job. Well done. Commendable.
Thanks, Tom. And that's a great segue to our promotion for the FNR membership. Just get to footballnationradio.com, click on the membership link, and you can become part of the voice of football in this country. And it's growing and growing all the time. And with the work of the AAFC and Tom and Rabbi Crayham, the AAFC, it is now loud and clear, the voice, and it's getting bigger and bigger. But, Tom, thanks for joining us today. It's a great pleasure having you in the studio.
Pleasure. It's an honour. Thank you, guys.
Good stuff. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go up to Sydney and talk to Adam Santa Rosa about the NPL in New South Wales here on Football Extra, here on FNR, Football Nation Radio.